Day two in the books, 2016 U.S. Open. But round two, not in the books. That's because Mother Nature had all sorts of plans for us at the beginning of this championship. Welcome to Golf News Net Live. I'm Will Haskett, often contributor. I don't know how good the takes are most of the time to GNN and the founder of GNN. And with me throughout the course of the week and the weekend is Ryan Ballingy, who is on his fifth pair of shoes, I believe. Ryan, how are you?
I'm good, Will. Believe it or not, I'm actually on my third pair of shoes, so we're not quite there yet.
Okay, well, good thing you packed a full dose of it. And I think before we even get into the leaderboard, because it's going to be really odd to sort of sort this whole thing out because you've got half the field or a little less than half the field that's actually gotten through 36 holes. I think the story all week was going to be the golf course, all of the rain that came on Thursday. How did you see this golf course shaping up on a Friday, a marathon day of golf? How has the old girl held up?
It's held up well, and it's starting to get tougher. Between rounds one and two, the USGA went out, double cut and rolled these greens. They're running between 14 and 14 and a half on the stem meter, which is where they intended them to be for the championship. They were probably about a half foot slower on Thursday when they tried to get in as much of the first round as they could for three weather delays, finally pushed them to cancel the rest of the day. And the one thing that they probably didn't anticipate doing was keeping the rough this deep, this thick for the remainder of the championship, because they're going to not be able to mow it. So what they're going to have to do is play the fairway somewhat soft on Saturday, see what happens. And then on Sunday, they may firm up as well, but they're going to have to probably leave the rough pretty close to what it is at this point. So by the time Sunday rolls around, typically Saturday is the most difficult day of the U.S. Open. There is a very decent chance that the final round on Sunday and what's left of the third round to be played on Saturday likely will be the most difficult day.
Yeah, and certainly we knew this golf course was going to be difficult. And you get a lot of questions about it. People say, you know, is it the rough? Is it the length? Is it the greens? Is this golf course playing tougher in a different way than we would have expected earlier in the week? Or from your vantage point, is it just still a hard golf course that's been made a little bit more difficult by the length that's been added because of the softness?
I think that they had kind of two game plans in mind. One would be if it rained like it has, and one would be if it didn't. And if it didn't, we would have seen a firmer set of fairways and greens. We would have seen shorter rough. There would have been less of a premium on hitting the fairway, although that premium still would have been there, just would have been a half-shot penalty for missing the fairway. It would have been maybe a third of a shot or a quarter of a shot. And that's obviously been elevated a little bit. And almost at this point, they've kind of blended the two. So they've now got the greens fast. They still have the deep rough. They have a little bit of the softness, but that's starting to go away. And that will probably go away pretty significantly tomorrow and throughout the weekend because the weather forecast calls for zero rain and 80 to 85 degree temperatures. So it's almost in the end, I think, that they're going to get both game plans that kind of run into each other. And unfortunately for the field, I think that means, as I said, it's only going to get worse from here. And so if you've got to play 36 holes today, you are through 36 holes, you've got the best end of the draw. Because what should be the course tomorrow is going to be harder than what they had today.
Yeah, and the numbers bear that out too, Ryan, and the fact that the afternoon wave on Thursday, which never actually teed off, so those that got 36 in, or many of them got 36 in today, that stroke average in round one when it was done ended up being about two shots less than those that had to tee off and then wait through the various weather delays on Thursday and then come back this morning to finish things off. And as we look at some of the key players in this one, the name that certainly stands out has to be Dustin Johnson. Two rounds in the 60s. He hit 16 of 18 greens in his opening round of 67 today, backed it up with a 69 this afternoon. I want to talk about him, Ryan, but as I tell everybody, it really doesn't matter at this point in time for DJ. We know what he is. We know what he's capable of. We certainly know what he's capable of on Thursdays and Fridays, week in and week out on the PGA Tour and in major championships. I just don't really know if he's interesting until Sunday.
I don't know that he's interesting until the back nine on Sunday.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can go that far with it because he certainly has the game. And as you've mentioned, we've borne it out pretty much week in and week out this season, really for the last two seasons. He's been playing the best consistent golf of his career, and it still hasn't netted a major championship. So the question is, as his scoring average statistically increases over the course of the week, can he just kind of keep it around the field average on Saturday and Sunday, and is that good enough? Probably not. He's got to probably beat the scoring average of the field a little bit. He's probably got to hang around even par to one over the rest of the way. And if he does that, he wins this thing probably somewhat comfortably. I don't know that you're going to have to do a whole lot better than that with how difficult things are about to get here. But that's asking a lot of a guy who's never won a major championship, has been within a hole of doing it, and really a putt of doing it, and hasn't been able to convert on four or five different occasions. So it's a big act for a guy to overcome the things that he has failed to accomplish in the past to break through on the most difficult U.S. Open test. But in another sense, because he is so lousy at putting, he may actually be an advantage here because the greens are going to be so firm at that. You're going to be hard pressed to make 25, 35 footers that really extend the momentum of a round, which means Dustin Johnson, who doesn't make a lot of those anyway, might be perfectly okay two putting greens, as long as he avoids a lot of three putts or worse, he's in the driver's seat.
Yeah. You know, and to your point, too, about how fast these greens are, this is a situation where I think the USGA, the grounds crew at Oakmont, has to be really careful because while the forecast is perfect for the rest of the weekend, there'll be some breeze, there'll be plenty of sun, but the humidity is supposed to be down, too. And, Ryan, you know that when there's no humidity, there's no moisture in the air, it's really hard to keep fast greens from getting away from the golf course management, from the players and everything. I just don't see a scenario where this golf course is going to let up at all and give people opportunities. So those that have put themselves in a good position, who have gotten 36 holes in, are certainly in a good spot. He's Ryan Ballingy on site at Oakmont. I'm Will Haskett. You're listening to Golf News Net live after day two of this 2016 United States Open. There are presently, as we sleep overnight and head into Saturday, 13 players who are under par in this championship. For the sake of this show, we will focus on the five who are in with rounds under par, and we'll throw in Jim Furyk as well, who has a hole to play when they restart on Saturday morning. Six players who are, for all intents and purposes, going to sit on a 36-hole spot under par. We talked about Dustin Johnson, Scott Piercy, 68-70, Sergio Garcia, 68-70, and the round of the tournament so far thrown in by Daniel Summerhays shoots 65 in round number two. You know, there's some interesting stories sort of lurking there in red figures. Ryan, what stands out to you from that group that's gotten 36 in?
I think if you look at the guys that are kind of out there that are in the clubhouse, you start thinking about redemption stories. Obviously, Dustin Johnson has won, never won a major. Sergio Garcia has won, never won a major. Jim Furyk is one who's won a major, but he's let several slip away since that major, which feels a long time. It was 13 years ago. You get Amy Sullivan, who is a fascinating story, who plays really well in difficult golf courses. And the same with Daniel Summerhays,
yeah,
who has a pretty sterling record on the PGA Tour on difficult setups. He is not your guy that goes 20 under par. He's the guy who gets tied for eighth when the winning score is minus six. And so this kind of plays into his hands a little bit. It's spectacular that he shot 65 around here. I think what Andrew Landry accomplished finishing that up this morning was incredible. But what Daniel Summerhays did on a more difficult test today is even more remarkable. And all of a sudden, it puts him into contention for this championship, a place where he feels pretty comfortable, where par is his friend.
How shocking is Furyk, two under par on his round as we halt play with one hole to go, 71 in his opening round, one under. Look, we know all the great stories, local guy. He was in contention back in 2007. I think it's one of those majors that he feels like he may have left on the table that he had a chance in. But given what he's doing, coming back from wrist surgery, his form has just not been there in trying to get back. You know, this is a long, hard, difficult golf course. It sets up to be the grinder that he always was. But I've got to tell you, Ryan, I'm shocked to see him in red figures in the top 10.
I'm surprised too, Will. I've more or less discounted Jim Furyk's chances just thinking that he was coming back relatively soon from the wrist issues. He would be rusty. This would be a big stage for him. But he's playing that Jim Furyk grinder style. And if you can keep doing that, it's exhausting. But if you can keep doing that, then you can get, like he did 9 years ago, to the 71st tee with a chance to think about winning this thing. And hopefully he learned from 9 years ago that he doesn't pull out driver and tries to go for the 17th green, if that's the case. I think he's very comfortable right now just playing for pars. He doesn't have to be aggressive. He doesn't have to go after long par fours and two. He can kind of run it short, chip it up, and do his thing to make a seven-footer and save par. I think he's probably more comfortable playing that style than trying to do anything on a, what is going to be a longer golf course, most weeks on the PGA Tour. I mean, at a 7,200-yard layout that plays slightly less than that with all the elevation change, this is a fairly short golf course for Chip Furyk. So if he just kind of keeps the ball in play, keeps running it up the neck of greens if he needs to, keeps hitting greens as he can, and makes pars and the occasional birdie, he's got a chance. And I'm completely shocked that I'm saying that.
Yeah.
But then again, he's done this several times in this championship since winning in 03, which really wasn't your typical U.S. Open at Olympia Field. And he's done it on really difficult golf courses. This one and the Olympic Club, probably the two most difficult U.S. Open golf courses are in the current rotation. So for him to be in this spot, in one sense, obviously, with the injury and everything that's happened in the offseason for him and so far this season, it's surprising. Given his track record, maybe we shouldn't be so shocked.
Yeah, and it's one of those stories that could really rise to the top of our consciousness come the weekend, should he be able to hold on to it. That includes a couple of the guys that are seeking their elusive first major. Sergio Garcia, kind of a shaky second round after the opening 68 today, and then Lee Westwood, who's a shot better, 3 under par, one off the lead, but he's one of those that has played just 18 holes and will tee off early tomorrow trying to chase the pace that is right now Dustin Johnson and Andrew Landry. But let's be real here, everybody's looking at the DJ -4 as the real number to track down. Okay, I'll give you one guy from the group, Ryan, that is under par through 18 holes that you like tomorrow morning to make a move. Andrew Landry at 4 under, Lee Westwood at -3, Shane Lowry at -2, and then the group at -1, Scottie Scheffler, Kevin Streelman, Bubba Watson, and Danny Lee. You get one to ride tomorrow morning. Who do you take?
I think it's Lee Westwood. I wrote a piece for Golf News Net this evening about Rory McIlroy grinding on the range late afternoon, 16 hours before his tee time tomorrow, and in strolled Lee Westwood, confident, capable. It seemed like he was in complete control. Every shot, striped, almost exactly where he wanted it. With a really good ball play for this golf course. And I think he feels extremely comfortable with where he's at, knowing that this golf course, at least tee to green, falls into his hands. The question mark again, like so many of these guys who are up there right now, can they keep putting well enough for long enough to hold off everybody else? So if I had to pick one guy right now, just because of the strength of his game from tee to green, I love Lee Westwood right now.
Yeah, I'm going to go Bubba out of that group. And the reason why I say it is Bubba Watson is one of those guys where you have to throw out what you see from him actually hitting the golf ball. And I now look for ancillary things when it comes to Bubba Watson. And in watching his round yesterday, Ryan, and call me crazy, there was something in his eyes. He never looked uncomfortable. He looked focused. He looked dialed in. He looked imaginative. I thought there was something out of Bubba Watson yesterday that made me rethink dismissing him as a possibility when the week began. And keep in mind, he played really well here as a youngster 9 years ago as well. I don't know. There's something. I saw something in Bubba. I would not be surprised if he climbs a couple of shots closer to the top when things tee off tomorrow morning.
I was more shocked that Watson shot 69 than Furyk making his move right now on Friday, because he just typically has a terrible mindset going into the U.S. Open. He's usually a pre-tournament loser. Woe is me. It's too hard. Rough stinks. It's bad. And then he follows through on that kind of mental discouragement and shoots 75, 76. Goodbye. We'll see you later. He doesn't seem to have that attitude right now, and I don't know what's caused that or why he feels that way, but he seems to have taken a shining to this place. And there really isn't a whole lot of imagination required to get around Oakmont. I mean, you hit it straight, you hit it straight, you two-putt. You hit it straight, you two-putt again. I mean, it's just hole after hole of this. But I think because of the rough, if he's inaccurate off the tee, which he can be, if he's inaccurate off the tee, he can still advance the ball reasonably well. Then he gets to flex his imagination, trying to use a short game to save for par. So, in one sense, yeah, it takes away his imagination, but he gets to use it in a different way. And I think for Bubba Watson, the most important part of any golf course is that he gets to use his brain. And when he gets to use it to see shots that other people can't or pull off things that seem very difficult, he he's engaged, and so long as he's engaged in a good way, he can contend. Who knows if that lasts beyond one day's worth of golf. He's got 36 more tomorrow on a much more difficult layout for him to figure this out. But, again, if he can kind of stay engaged and keep a good attitude, that's the most important thing with him, he could be a part of the conversation.
He is Ryan Ballingy. I'm Will Haskett. This is GNN Live, wrapping up day two of the U.S. Open. So much more to come on the program here for you tonight, including we'll play a little game or two. Ryan and I will. A little agree or don't agree. Plus, big names that we have not talked about. As good as it has been for Dustin Johnson, it has been just as bad for some of the big names in the game of golf. That and more on the other side. Back with you after this.
Ever dreamed of a way to video chat one-on-one with famous former athletes, coaches, and other big names in the sports world? Well, now you can with a brand new online communication service called Talk to Legends. The Talk to Legends mobile platform is available right now for free in the iOS Apple Store. And now the Talk to Legends mobile app is available in the Google Play Store. And it puts you just a couple of clicks away from connecting by video to your sports heroes in a 5-minute person-to-person conversation on your iPhone or iPad. Yes, it's as easy as registering and then picking a time to talk to your legend. There are hundreds of former athletes from all sports, including the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, college sports, the Olympics, MMA, and more. And they're ready to talk to you in a scheduled video conversation through Talk to Legends. No matter what device or tablet, just go into the Apple Store or the Google Play Store and download the Talk to Legends app. It's time for you to talk to legends.
Back on GNN Live, day two of the U.S. Open in the books. It has been sloshy, soggy, sloppy. It's been all sorts of fun for those who have slogged around Oakmont Country Club. I'm Will Haskett with Golf News Net founder. He's the head honcho. He keeps the lights on. He's Ryan Ballingy. All right, Ryan, let's go through, as you are there, some of the big names that we have not focused on. We've talked about Dustin Johnson at the top of the leaderboard with Andrew Landry. We've talked about Sergio. We have talked about Jim Furyk. We have talked about Bubba Watson. They all find themselves under par. Those that do not include number one in the world, Jason Day, who entered this week as I think many's favorite in this one, opened with 76 in his opening round on Friday. He's one under with three holes to go when the horn was blown for darkness on Friday. He's in position. He's going to make the cut. Now the question, I think, Ryan, is has he found enough in round number two to be a factor when they make the cut?
That's a million-dollar question, or in his case, probably almost $2 million question if you could figure out to make up what is now a nine-shot deficit. This doesn't put him out of the golf tournament at all. And I think that for all of those guys, for Day, for McIlroy, who shot 77 and has still yet to start his second round, other guys like that who were kind of the surprising big numbers on Thursday into Friday that finished the first round, they need to remember that they really just need to shoot a round that's basically one or two under par in round two to make the cut. But I think the cut will be anywhere between plus five and plus seven. I like plus six. And if you kind of creep around that number, you're probably not going to be any worse than 10 shots back. Can't expect Andrew Landry to go out there and do anything really all that special on Saturday. Westwood, you could expect something, but not dramatic. I think that 65 will not be out there the rest of the week that Daniel Summerhays had. So if you think about it that way, and you know that there are bogeys out there, you know there are doubles out there, you know there are three, four, five, and six putts out there, you know all those bad things work. If you avoid those and other people fall into them, you quickly move up the leaderboard. And so I think that's the attitude that Jason Day has to take here, getting off the golf course, hopefully he can get one more birdie in before he goes, gets the plus four, so you're eight back. That's not a lot to make up over the course of a weekend. He knows he's a great putter. He knows if he can figure out a tee to green game, which admittedly he struggled with in winning the Players' Championship in May, that he can get going. And he just needs to be able to play well from tee to green, and he can figure out a lot of problems that way. So I still think he's got a chance if he can figure out how to strike the ball from tee to green. He's got the length, probably more so than any player in this field not named Dustin Johnson or Tony Finau. So he still has a lot of time and a lot of holes left and a lot of other holes left for the contenders that are in his way, that he can make up that ground pretty quickly.
All right, again, we have a 7 a.m. Eastern restart coming up on Saturday morning, where those finishing up their second rounds and those beginning their second rounds will all have tee shots, as we will now focus on the others. I got to get to the soundbite here. Hold on.
It's time for Agree or Don't Agree.
You know it's an important radio show when we have sound effects to kick off a segment. It is time for Agree or Don't Agree. I do have to voice my displeasure in this segment, Ryan. I don't know how it's Agree or Don't Agree. What happened to the word disagree? I'm not really sure what's going on there. I disagree with the name of the segment that we are getting ready to play here, but that is a discussion for another time. Okay, Agree or Don't Agree, does Phil Mickelson play the third round?
I'm going to agree. He seems to have found some sense of relief with that last party that he had as he was getting ready to walk off the golf course. He only really needs one more to make sure he sees the weekend. I know that's not necessarily the easiest task in the world here at Oakmont. Really, Phil hasn't made a whole lot of birdies to demonstrate that they're easy to come by for him. But I feel like he's going to get by on the number, and we'll see him for the rest of the weekend.
Agree or don't agree, Rory McIlroy will not win a major when par is a good score.
Agree. It is in his head at this point. And he said it in his Tuesday news conference that he knows he has a historically bad record when the winning score is high, or at least relative to par high in terms of aggregate score. That's not his friend, that he would have to do a lot of things here that are kind of contrary his nature to win here, and then on top of all of that, found himself grinding on the range for more than an hour on Friday afternoon, 16 hours before his tee time, trying to figure out how to hit a high cut, which is totally against his nature, to see if he can play a little bit more aggressively around here. I don't think he'll ever feel comfortable on a golf course where you're just hitting iron and fairway wood off the tee. His style of golf, his way of winning championships, is with birdies and eagles and just throttling the competition. All four of his major wins have been at least 13 under par. We're not going to get anywhere near here, near that figure on Sunday. And he knows that. I think that's the thing that confounds him the most. He just doesn't have grinded out golf in him. He's not a grinder. He has either A golf, which is way under par, or C golf, when it is the demand that you make a lot of par.
Made 8 bogeys, just 1 birdie in his opening round of 77. He tees off at 8:39 a.m. Eastern time in his second round and will begin that round 11 shots out of first place. This is a somewhat loaded and you can even call it philosophical question, but agree or don't agree, Andrew Landry is currently a co-leader in this golf tournament.
Andrew Landry's going to make the cut. That's the
there. Okay.
The good news.
All right. Hedging.
Barring that he doesn't shoot worse than 80, I'm pretty sure he makes the cut. So he's got that going for him, which is nice. Beyond that, I think he kind of alluded to the reality for him of this tournament when he finished this morning and said he wasn't really thinking about a top 10 or a win in this championship. He was thinking about a top 10 because it would buy him another start on the PGA Tour. Had a miserable season. He missed his first 5 cuts in a row. He's not playing good golf overall. He knows he's struggling in the reshuffle for the Web.com Tour graduate. He needs top 10. He needs money. And I think that the second you start thinking about that instead of trying to accomplish the ultimate goal, which is to win, you psych yourself out. So, I would be surprised if he's anywhere near the top 20 tomorrow when he finishes round 2, but I'm pretty certain he's going to be around for the weekend. Then we see what goes on from there.
Agree or don't agree, the winning score on Sunday will be under par.
That's close. Saturday and Sunday, I think this golf course is going to be a wake-up call on Sunday morning. And unfortunately for the guys who haven't played their second rounds yet, they're going to get 36 holes of that wake-up call on Saturday, at least potentially. I think that the winning score is even or worse at this point. You have 4 strokes right now is the kind of padding that the co-leaders have. One's got to play. He's not going to be there. One is one behind. It could be there in Lee Westwood, maybe a little bit better. But then you've got to play Saturday, which is typically the hardest round in the U.S. Open, and you get basically the same conditions again on Sunday. I think these guys just come back too far. I don't think it's under par that wins.
You got any for me? any questions?
Any agree?
Yeah.
Agree? That's a good one. So used to nothing.
You've seen more golf than I have this week, but it's at least, you know, from a different vantage point from those watching on the couch versus those that are on their third pair of shoes.
Okay, let's try that. Agree or don't agree? Does Jordan Spieth shoot an under par round in round two when he gets going on Saturday?
I agree with that. I think the time off for Jordan Spieth was good because I felt he was battling himself more than he needed to battle himself in that first round. He let the quick restart with a lot of those players get to him. You know, Bryson DeChambeau almost, you know, alluded to it when he was interviewed in the second rain delay about how they were a little upset with the USGA officials. And it was kind of a petulant sort of day for Jordan Spieth with himself and with things that were going on. I think a long break for him certainly helps when things are all said and done. All right, I got a fun one for you. Agree or don't agree, anybody who wore white pants on Thursday should have been assessed a two-shot penalty as soon as they arrived on site.
And Adam Shupak from Golf Week said, the dangers of scripting. So many of these guys have their clothes laid out for them by their clothing sponsors ahead of the championship, not potentially anticipating backup outfits in the event that the host course turns into Woodstock 2016. And ultimately, these guys still have to wear the things that were laid out for them. So I felt really bad for Ricky Fowler and Danny Willett, who went out there in white pants, stunk up the joint round one, looked nowhere near comfortable. And at least they walked away without at least visible skid marks from mud on the golf course. But that was a terrible choice for anyone who was wearing white pants. Yeah, I'll give them the two-stroke penalty. Then again, Willett and Fowler probably gave themselves a two-stroke penalty.
What the heck happened with Peter Hansen?
He was disqualified for signing for an incorrect score. I don't know whether that was higher. Obviously, it was lower than what he intended or what actually happened out there. But I don't know which way he was playing, whether that was going to help him make the cut anyway.
Yeah, he opened with a 77 and then gets the old DQ when it's all said and done. All right, you mentioned that you've got Rory McIlroy and the article on him grinding on the range up on thegolfnewsnet.com. What else can we look forward to content-wise going into the weekend? It's been a hectic, wild, crazy week. I don't really think we've gotten stories, Ryan, out of this tournament yet because of just trying to play catch-up to get the actual golf in.
Yeah, I agree. I think that we're still kind of at the point where we're figuring out the identity of this championship, and it's starting to take shape a little bit. We'll have to see how round two does tomorrow morning. I think right now the leaderboard looks like kind of one of redemption, as we mentioned earlier, and Jay Flemmo is going to take a look at that for us this evening and tomorrow morning. And then he'll talk about, from an architecture perspective, the closing stretch at Oakmont should give a good reveal into the strategy that's required to play the final four or five holes well. We also have a video up on our site of holes 8 and 17, both playing about 300 yards, both contrasting in par in a whole lot of other ways. It's a good look at those two holes as well. Keith Leventhal is killing it this week with photography, original photography for the site. He's had some great photos all week, and they look really good after each and every day of the championship. And as I mentioned, we'll have the look of Rory McIlroy grinding on the range, and then we'll see where the Saturday action takes us.
I'll have the midterm grades on Fox's coverage as well, as that has certainly been a contentious topic for those of us golfophiles around the world as well, catching up with it. All right, Ryan, get some sleep, chisel the mud out of the cleats, and we will do this again tomorrow when hopefully, if all things go as planned, we've got 54 holes in the books.
That's the hope. And even if we get mostly 54 holes in the books, I think if we can get through everything tomorrow, then we'll be on schedule for a Sunday finish, and hopefully we can avoid the P word and we can all get out of here when the day is Sunday, not Monday.
Yeah, you watch your mouth. You keep those words all to yourself the rest of the way. He's Ryan Ballingy. I'm Will Haskett. All right, we have got 2 days in the books. We will see exactly how things shake out when that second round is officially completed coming up on Saturday morning. They will regroup. It'll be threesomes off of both the first and the 10th tee. They'll try and get it all in come Saturday night, and when it is done through 54 holes, or even Saturday is over, we'll have your wrap-up right here on GNN Live. Dustin Johnson, two rounds in the books, both of them in red figures. He's 4 under par, tied with Andrew Landry through 2 days of the U.S. Open. We'll talk to you tomorrow.